When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batzer. Professor James Rahm, Plato and the Tyrant, The Fall of Greece's Greatest Dynasty and the Making of a Philosophic Masterpiece. The setting is Syracuse. The first visit by Plato to Dionysius the Elder and the Syracusan tables, Plato has the same reaction the Puritans had towards Charles I, and that didn't end happily. In this instance, however, Plato leaves, and Dionysius the Elder, the Tyro, the man who rose up and became master of his world, dies in 367, and Plato is invited back because the throne, well, the metaphor of leader, is inherited by Dionysius the Younger, who is the son of the other wife from the marriage, not Dion's sister. Mm-hmm. Dion, about 10 years older than Dionysius II, but he's had great responsibilities and become very wealthy. It's his idea to invite Plato. And James, what a great idea, because otherwise we wouldn't have all this drama. But what did Dion make of Plato? What did he hope Plato would achieve by inviting him?
That's a complicated question, because we don't know for sure what Dion's motives were. He may have been seeking power for himself, because a lot of people at court realized he was a far better at governance than his brother-in-law, Dionysius the Younger. But ostensibly, his goal was to get the ruler educated, since he lacked the kind of education that would make him an enlightened monarch, which is what Dion wanted him to be. So he made the case that Plato, by coming to Syracuse, becoming his tutor, could transform him into a king, a legitimate ruler, rather than a tyrant.
And what did Plato have to offer? I think he started the Republic at this point. I'm not sure. He's been 20 years at the Academy, become extremely famous. He's the philosopher celebrity of the Hellenistic world. So at this point, what did he have to contribute to Dionysius? Don't drink so much, or was he ready to instruct him about the forms of government?
Well, both. And his arrival in Syracuse all by itself was a huge boon to the regime because, as you say, he was extremely well known and respected. So merely by coming there to attend on the ruler, he was giving him a huge boost. But his lessons started with reform of lifestyle. Stop drinking so much. Stop giving your attention to feasting and cultivating flatterers and toadies. But look for real friends, people who are devoted to the same ideals as you, for help in governing your realm. Secondly, try to focus on these eternals, these forms, and not on the world around you. Try to think in abstract terms, as a philosopher would do.
Dionysius the Younger, it's easy to dismiss him right away as a punk. However, this man has gifts. And one of them is he's a survivor. He's drinking very heavily. The Syracusan tables, the image I get from your presentation, James, is they were all immature and having a good time, kind of like wild teenagers. Is that approximately what we should imagine?
I think that's about right. Aristotle, in one of his lost works, of which we have a fragment, says that there was a 90-day drinking party in the court when the doors were closed and no official business was allowed to enter. So that suggests that there was a kind of a wilding aspect to this group. And they had enormous wealth, too, from the tax base and the empire, so they could afford to subsidize these bacchanals.
I'm glad you mentioned that because I missed that detail. This is a very powerful state by now. They had a huge fleet, right, and a big army. And were they conquering all of Sicily, or did the Carthaginians still have a foothold?
The Carthaginians still very much in possession of the western part of the island. Syracuse had consolidated the eastern part under its own sway, and also most of the foot of the Italian boot. So they'd extended their power across the Straits of Messina to southern Italy and incorporated a lot of the cities there, including Locri, the home of Dionysius's mother.
Yes, and now we have what the professor introduces as an expansionist power that threatens anybody nearby. And they're looking to chew their way up the Italian boot if they can go forward. And suddenly the leader is very immature, drunk most of the time, a danger to all the teenage girls in the town and more. And at the same time, he has an older cousin, brother, uncle. He has an older uncle, Dion, who's quite capable of leading this empire, expansionist empire. And Dion knows it, and Syracuse knows it, and I think Dionysius II knew it. Is that correct? He knew that he was challenged by his brother, by his uncle.
I think that's right. He was very much put in the shade by Dion, and especially by Dion's relationship to Plato, which was a much closer bond than the one that he was attempting to forge.
And so the clash is coming. It was over a letter. How did the falling out, given the atmosphere, I can understand anything could have triggered it, but what was the driver?
Dion sent a letter to the Carthaginian diplomats who were in the region to negotiate an end to their fighting with Syracuse. And he said, essentially, don't talk to Dionysius without me being present. It's an understandable sentiment because Dionysius was young and untried at this point and liable to make mistakes in a high-stakes negotiation. But it could also be interpreted as a betrayal, collusion with Syracuse's great enemy. And that's how Dionysius chose to regard it.
Dion is about to get banished, and he's lucky he wasn't killed. Was that the first impulse to banish, to exile rather than kill? I've never understood how they came to that decision.
So one has to see this in the context of, as you said earlier, of an unhappy family. In addition to being a rival and potential enemy, Dion was also the brother-in-law of Dionysius. He'd married Dionysius's sister. So it's hard to kill someone who's so closely related to your own family.
In other words, not only is he the brother of the other wife, he's married the sister of the tyrant.
That's right. He's a double brother-in-law to both generations.
I got lost the first time I read that. Second time, too, I had to make a chart. And James provides illustrations so you can sort of follow, but really, that double marriage made everything much more difficult.
Yes, it did.
Plato is not happy with what he sees, but he doesn't get to leave right away. Dion is sent away, and Plato, is his fate in doubt? Does Plato think he'll be killed?
Not at this point, but he is very much under a cloud of suspicion. And a rumor, in fact, is going around Syracuse that he has been killed because, you know, wild rumors tend to get spawned in this kind of environment. Dionysius was determined to have the public see Plato as one of his allies and kept him more or less as a hostage under a kind of house arrest to prevent any sense that Plato was leaving in disgust at the exile of Dion.
Remember, this is Plato the philosopher. This is not Plato the diplomat. And right. So I imagine him in his rooms taking notes or at least observing the facts of what happens when you deal with a tyrant who is uneducable, or at least we can presume he's uneducable. Dion is sent away. Plato is eventually bailed out by Archytas. I like Archytas. Am I coming across somebody who is favored everywhere, or is this just a good view of him?
No, Archytas is considered one of the Greek world's great exemplars. He was both a skilled political leader and military leader, and published philosophic treatises on optics, harmonics, higher mathematics. So he really did give a kind of credence to the idea of a philosopher king.
His reputation is not adequate for the 21st century. We could use him. And the number 729, I'll never be the same to me again. What did it mean to Archytas?
So 729 is a very powerful number. It's a perfect cube, and it's the first perfect cube after 64. So it has a lot of mathematical properties, and the Pythagoreans, who, as I mentioned before, they saw the whole universe in mathematical terms. And if you divide 729 in half, it comes out to 364 and a half, which is very, very close to 365, the number of days in the solar year. And the Pythagoreans just sort of fudged that extra half day so that the number of days plus nights, that is double the solar year, would come out to 729.
You note that we sort of fudge that extra half day, too. We call it leap year, so we haven't improved in 2,500 years. The drama continues. Plato is rescued by Archytas. Dion is in exile. And we next come across this conversation at the Olympic Games. The book is Plato and the Tyrant, The Fall of Greece's Greatest Dynasty. We're building towards horror and tragedy and massacre. But it takes a while. It's cooking.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.